Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
In the interview. So my name is General Jeff, and I approve of this being recorded.
Definitely.
Courtesy of Slauson Girl Promotions and Productions, and yeah.
Definitely. Okay. Is this good? It sounds good. Welcome to Slauson Girl Speaks. I'm your host, Slauson Girl, bringing you world news with a South Central state of mind. So, on today's episode, on the first podcast of 2021, I have the opportunity to speak with General Jeff. He is a homeless rights advocate here in Los Angeles, and he is someone that I like to talk to about the homeless crisis in LA, because he's not just talking about LA's homeless crisis from a theoretical standpoint, but from lived experience and a factual point of view. Today, we'll be talking about what Jeff refers to as the homeless industrial complex, and why things seem to be out of control when you look at the homeless crisis in LA. So, General Jeff, how are you today?
I'm great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I just want to go on record, start off top by saying I'm born and raised in South Central LA, and you got that South Central LA state of mind. So I always love doing this interview. You are my favorite journalist on the planet.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Definitely. And yeah, again, I like talking to you because we're going to get the real unfiltered, you know, lived experience. This is what I see. This is what I know to be true. This isn't what I've researched. This isn't what the news is telling me. This is my perspective, you know, based on my experiences. So again, so tell the listeners more about yourself. You said, you know, you're from South Central, but who is General Jeff?
Oh, just some mysterious regular guy that just wants to help. That's the short answer. Born and raised in South Central LA, Crenshaw District. Graduated from Crenshaw High School. State champion in basketball my senior year. One of the first generation West Coast hip-hop pioneers. You know, from locking and popping to rapping and producing, got gold and platinum plaques on my wall for working with Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, DJ Quick, and so many others. And been toured halfway around the world. I'm on my second passport, and it's about to expire soon. But then I just got tired of living out of a suitcase, and I just wanted to, you know, give back like to my hood. But the game banger was too strong. And, you know, anytime I tried to bring rivals or bring folks with what we just call it as differences of opinions in terms of the direction of the hood, I just couldn't. And so all those frustrations, one of the youngsters were like, hey, OG, I see you got a big heart. You really want to help people. If you really want to help people, you should go to Skid Row. I'm like, oh, I'm not trying to do all that. I'm trying to help from my hood. I don't know Skid Row. I know South Central LA. And then finally it got to the point where I just kept just bumping my head against the wall, just running to the walls. And then finally it was like, well, let me go see what this Skid Row thing is about. Went there and it was like, oh, whoa, this is deep. I'm not used to this. And so what I wound up doing was reducing myself to a state of homelessness so that I could really understand the lingo, the mindset, the lifestyle, all of that. So when I went to Skid Row, when I knew that that's what I wanted to do, it became a challenge. Like, I don't want to come in like I'm a superhero with my cape blowing in the wind. I'm here to save y'all. Dun, 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 dun. It's like, no, let me roll up in here and just really, you know, deal with the issues. And my initial plan was to plug into the system that was already in place. I'm hearing all these nonprofits, all these missions, all these social service providers. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Easy peasy. It's just something is getting lost in translation. between the politicians, the nonprofits, the people. You know, that's what I do in the entertainment industry. You know, I come in and, you know, network and make things happen, shake and bake, you know, wine and dine, schmooze and poo, make moves. And so it was like, okay, let me come up in here and just do what I do, though. This is going to be easy. I'll be out of here in 6 months tops. Here we are 14 plus years later. But the thing was, I found out that the system wasn't what I thought it was. And so I'm sure you got a lot of listeners that it probably is like the old me when I first came to Skid Row, and they probably got that same mindset because there's this controlled perspective and this narrative is framed and controlled. And I call them poverty pimps. Because at the end of the day, what they, you know, I'm exposing them because what they're doing is as long as homelessness exists, there's a whole lot of folks that's getting paid. It's just like, you know, the prison industrial complex. Mm-hmm. As long as our brothers and sisters are incarcerated, it's a whole bunch of jobs that's created, a whole bunch of money and funding, whether they get on the bus, whether they, you know, whatever it is that they do. And so it's the same thing with the homeless industrial complex. I coined that term. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's a trip to hear it bouncing back off walls, bouncing back at me by other so-called quote-unquote experts. It's like the only way you can get that is if it can't, if you were listening to me. So a lot of the information that we push out there, we're actually feeding the leader, the so-called leaders and politicians and experts on homelessness. And so in that regard, while I don't get paid for what I do, I'm 100% volunteer. But luckily I get a little royalty check from some songs I made back in the day. Matter of fact, shout out to 21 Savage and Metro Boomin. They just sampled one of my old joints, Nobody Disses Me, a song I did with one of my old crews, Rodney Owen, Joe Cooley. So good looking out. And right. So, you know, the royalty checks come in. Hey, I haven't seen one yet, but hey, when they come in, all right. They're keeping us current and all that. But so that provides for my freedoms to know I don't have a job, know I'm not a nonprofit because I'm speaking out against the nonprofits. And I don't want nobody to think like, oh, he's just jealous because we're getting funded and he's not. Like, no. I don't touch money. So all I do is roll up my sleeve and focus on the issue.
Definitely. So let's talk a little bit about the nonprofit, the world of the nonprofits. A lot of money flows to nonprofits to do, you know, social services work. But what a lot of us and, you know, yourself specifically has come to realize is that there seems to be a disconnect somewhere. And that's not to disregard the nonprofits that are doing good work, you know. I guess we can specifically focus on the nonprofits that deal with the homeless in Los Angeles. What has been some of the things that you've come to realize about the nonprofit, nonprofits in Los Angeles that deal with specifically the homeless?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And it's a lot to unpack with that as well. So I just want to kind of chop that up a bit because going back to me being an entertainer in the entertainment industry, you know, talking to people of all walks of life and, you know, again, being a basketball in the basketball world and dealing with different cats. My homies went pro, you know, top colleges, all that. So in the summer leagues, I'm out there balling with them and all that. And then you just always have a lot of people hovering and hanging around. We don't know who these folks are, like whether they went to college with these cats or whether they represent them business management. So it's a lot of conversation beyond basketball that happens. And so back then, you know, I was hearing about nonprofit because there were some cats that were like going to college, went to college with this dude that's about to get drafted number one, all this kind of stuff. And so we know what his career is going to be, is the NBA. And it's like his buddies that he grew up with or that he befriended in college, it's like roommates or whatever. And it's like, you know, what are they going to do? And so we sitting on the sideline chit-chatting in between games. And they're like, oh, I'm going to start a nonprofit. And, you know, because they, it was a white dude, white kid. And he was like, you know, we're encouraged to do that while we're in college. And I had no idea what he was talking about because I'm like, we're not encouraged. So I don't know who is we, who's encouraging you. I got so many questions to ask, but I'm like, okay, we'll come back to that because I didn't want to interrupt, you know, take over the whole flow of just, you know, the homies on the sideline in between games. And so, but it always stuck with me, like, what is he talking about? Then to run into hip hop and run to somebody else. You know, you hear it when hip hop was brand new, first generation West Coast hip hop, so it's brand new. Everybody's excited. And so, you know, you get fans come up after the show or whatever, just say, what do you do for a living? Like, enough about me. You know what I do. I was on stage. What do you do? Well, I'm in college right now. Okay, what you going to do for college? I don't know. Maybe I'll either work for a nonprofit. Ultimately, I want to start. And it's like, wait a minute. Here's this nonprofit thing. What is this? Somebody's like a sheep herder. They're shepherding these kids into these nonprofits. What is that? And then come to find out, you know, America as a country creates jobs for Americans. So they direct a lot of funding to the infrastructures of different industries. And come to find out, nonprofit is an industry just overall that creates a lot of jobs. Whatever it is, whether it's saving the trees, saving the whales, saving the humans, homeless humans, what with environment. I mean, it's just nonprofit.
Saving property. The black humans.
You know what I mean? And so, which we don't have enough nonprofits for that, but because we're just now getting a understanding of the information, of the structure, mm-hmm. and actually of the significant funding. It's like, mm-hmm. like for instance, the Ford company, the Ford car company, you know, the automotive company, they actually have a nonprofit. And most corporations in corporate America have this nonprofit arm, so they don't look like they're just greedy little bastards. Excuse my language. I'm sorry, I speak three languages, English, Ebonics, and File. And they interchange, you know, so I don't know what type of podcast this is.
Welcome here.
I try to keep it PG when I talk. Well,
so that's, you don't have to censor yourself here.
Okay, cool. And so like Ford Foundation, they have, that's their nonprofit wing. And they're one of the biggest donors that gives out, I don't know, tens of millions to hundreds of millions every year. You know, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And there's so many different, you know, they started off as a offshoot of Microsoft. When Bill Gates was you know, over Microsoft, and you just look at all these corporations, I'm pretty sure Amazon, you know, they, you know, all these funding, just millions and millions of dollars, and we at Black folks as a people, we don't know nothing about that. You know we can go get the services that the nonprofits provide. You know, our kids can go to the Boys and Girls Club. Where does the Boys and Girls Club actually get their funding from, though? It's not. I mean, it's a whole network of folks that are successful that kick into this structure, this infrastructure, because it creates jobs for their kids and their families. Like, we don't think about that, and so it keeps them working. And so just overall nonprofit industries, it's millions of Americans that are, well, you know, whether it's healthcare, it just goes on and on. And so it's something that we have to look into as a people and say, hey, how can we get in there and benefit, especially to extract a lot of these resources that should come specifically to our communities. And we're missing out on a lot. The Latinos got that figured out. Our brown brothers and sisters, they got some nonprofits, and they lobby and fight hard. They politic hard for their resources to the point, I mean, it's great. You know, Asian, our Asian brothers and sisters, same thing. I mean, we got some blacks up in there. You know, to me, it's like them bougie blacks. I don't know. NAACP, everybody. I name names. I'm sorry. I don't know who y'all funders are. You know, beep, dog, beep. And I'm naming names. Beep, edit that out. Beep, what are you doing? Who is this guy? Hey. So we have to put a disclosure. The views of General Jeffs are his exclusively. Nah, it has nothing to do with Slauson Girl.
No, it does. Shout out to the bougie blacks. Shout out to y'all.
And it's like, so I mean, so they getting it, but they hoarding it.
That part.
And that's where it's like, okay, man, we got generations and generations of able-bodied, you know, whether it's HBCU, you know, black colleges.
Hello.
I mean, we got some black folks with brains
and
that
bread.
Know how to, that can do some things. And we just, we just short of a little capital to really get something started. And instead of trying to open up a business, which is, it's hard to open up a regular for-profit business. We just going to sell gold jewelry. It's hard, you know, because that's you got to build a business. The nonprofit industry, at the end of the day, you just need a bomb ass. Excuse me, you just need a qualified grant writer. Somebody can write grants. You just submitting grants, and then the whole thing is, if you know how to negotiate a deal, it's like, well, maybe you pay them a couple of coins or something, but just to get them, you know, up in your space. But at the end of the day, write your salary in the grant. Mm-hmm. So if you write me for $100,000. and you want me to pay you $40,000 and write the grant for $140,000. When we get that grant, you extract your $40,000 and I get my bam. Everybody had bam. And then, that hit. And then a lot of times with these funders, like Ford Foundation, once you get in their rotation, they'll be like, oh, you're just the type of applicant we be like, hopefully you'll apply again next year. And they be looking, checking for, so once you get in the city, all of a sudden you just hit the same, you don't have to go look in different places. It's like, okay, grant writer, we don't need you no more. We can still, I could just say same as last year and then get that 140. And then all of a sudden, I don't want to cut nobody out, but there's a lot of nonprofits. It's an amazing game, the nonprofit hustle. A lot of game out there with that. And so, but my whole thing is I try to speak on it in all, to any and all audiences so that we can start taking a hard look at that, because they got grants for, like, there's certain, you know, with on now social media. Back in the days, it was just books that just would print this information out. And, you know, even just like with college scholarships, mm-hmm. Grants, it's all in that same thing that's come. You know, I'm left-handed, so I remember I'm looking at left-handed scholarships, like left-handed grants. Oh, because somebody that died with oodles and oodles of money, gazillions, and they were like, I want to give back, but I want somebody that, you know, fits my persona. So I'm going to give $1 million every year to a left-handed something, something, something. So that's part of the requirements. You got to be left-handed. You submit for that. Are you left-handed? Yes. Approved. It's like, oh, wow, just because I'm left-handed, mm-hmm. I got like $50,000 just for being left-handed. It's amazing how easy it is once you get in a rotation.
So at what point do we start to see kind of the negative, like, undertones of the nonprofit world, specifically when it comes to the homeless?
Sure. That's a great segue. Oh, that's a beautiful question. See, that's why I love Slauson Girl, because you get right to it, like you said. And so the thing about that is, and again, America is a country that's based on a system of capitalism. And so there's nothing but opportunities out here. It's like, you know, it's all about hustlers. Like, we hustle, we, you know, black folks, I'm from the streets of South Central. You know, you got to have a hustle. You got your main hustle, your side hustles, you know, whatever, your legal hustles. I'm just saying, your illegal hustle. Hey, I'm just saying, folks, it's hustle. All nationalities is like that. A lot of people hustle jobs. They hustle, you know, contacts, networks. When it comes to the nonprofit, those that don't know, once you know, then it's a matter of going to these fundraising parties, these social, you know, when they're networking parties. That's what you got to have your business card, and you bam, and you talk to folks and you network, that the exchange of information. I'm not there to meet and greet. Hey, I like your suit. Where'd you get your suit from? I want a suit and tie like that. Damn, the suit and tie. Bro, where'd you get the funding to be able to buy that suit? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the funding sources. And so, but America, just being able, so much opportunity for capitalism, there's automatically built in the need for greed. Greed automatically just all of a sudden over the last 50 years has just multiplied to just this level that's beyond normalcy. There was always greed built into capitalism, but now it's just gotten to this rate where greed is expected more so than, you know, the front. It used to be greed within a front. It's just like the structure of, again, we talking about corporate America having these nonprofit wings. Now you just got nonprofits that's out there just getting it. Whatever they can get a grant for. So if they know, like this, oh, we want to build a space for homeless people, shelter. Okay, great. So they want to do that. But then it's like, well, there's $1 million grant for tree planting. And then all of a sudden they writing grants trying to get that $1 million. Like, we plan on, you know, planting trees all throughout this space. Then when they get that grant, they may plant one tree, you know, and then keep the rest of that funding. And it's like, it's not even about the tree. But then the thing is, they're taking away from other nonprofits that really their primary focus is trees.
Right.
And really helping the environment. They're like, man, we're not trying to, we plant one tree, we help the environment, give me the rest of that coin. And right. So now, because now they're, because there's like little to no oversight, you know, everything is deregulated. So the federal government, you know, oh, we don't want the federal government, you know, just, you know, heavy handed monitoring the nonprofit. And, you know, if a nonprofit thing is, oh, we're giving back, we're helping society, why would you be heavily regulating us? And like, yeah, you got a good point. You're do-gooders. We'll look for the criminals, or we'll regulate the banks and the other, you know, Wall Street and the other, because it's money. And then it just, the nonprofits is making a killing. So, like, for instance, in Skid Row, the homeless, you know, homeless nonprofits, the CEOs and executive directors are making six-figure salaries, as much as $200,000 and $300,000 per year. And it's like, and so then, you know, then they always, again, as long as homelessness continues, that's job security for them. Right. So are they really trying to help end homelessness, even though that's what they say on their mission statements and all their marketing slogans and campaigns, smiling on the camera and photo opping, oh, we helping homeless. They may help five, one, two, or a few, you know, that photo op with a group of them, but then the rest of everybody want, what about the other people that are that we see driving up and down the street or walking out the street that are practically left for dead, looking like it's third world, you know, country type conditions. Hmm. And it's like, well, they're not within our four walls. If they're faith-based, we'll say a prayer for them and, mm-hmm. you know, all this other stuff. Oh, man, and it's sad to me, and it hit me as a human being. Hmm. At the day, I'm not connected to nothing. I'm a human being born and raised in this universe, right. and I care about my fellow human beings. And it's like, for folks to break it down, oh, you got to be a member of our program. Because that way, when you sign up for to be a member of some nonprofit's program, that means now they you boost their numbers. Now they can make money off you. Mm-hmm. If you're not a member of their program, they you because the whole thing is they don't want to. It's competitive. It's capitalism. So mission A is not gonna support mission B's clients, even if they pass by and see mission B's clients in the middle of the streets or even I stay out front. Oh, and everybody knows this person is connected to mission B. Mission ain't gonna, they just gonna walk right by him and not even help him. And it's like, I mean, that's a human being in need. Help right. him. But like, no, because they're gonna, you give that person resources, they're gonna run back over to mission B. And then mission B will look like they provided those resources. So you're taking our resources and it gets real petty like that. Hmm. And it just, you know, but so that's when I'm like, we need some more, especially in Skid Row. Skid Row has been historically since the crack epidemic in the 80s. Majority black community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, city of Los Angeles, we see all these famous celebrities and athletes and rappers. Right. And I'm talking about y'all. My brotherhood and all that. But hey, I'm day one. There wasn't no money in rapping back in the 80s. So don't look to me to fund everything. But you got a lot of folks living good is what I'm saying. And they're not even aware that the Skid Row is the homeless capital of America is majority black community. And when I got to Skid Row, I looked at I got there in August 2006. So I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at the census numbers. I'm looking at all, I'm trying to figure it out. You know, they're doing the homeless count back then. It was back then, it was every two years. And so I banged on them right away. So what y'all saying is homeless people only matter every other year because they getting that funding every year. And if they get you in the system, like I say, the NGOs, oh, we'll come back again. You already approved for next year. So you get a 2 year. And then the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority is they get $300 to $400 million every year.
Wow.
So why y'all not counting every year then? Is it just, why is it just the same cronyism? And I bless them now they count every year because General Jeff said so. But, and so you got all, you know, historically Skid Row is black. And it's like, well, my whole thing is if black folks really took care of black folks, you know, them are people on them sidewalks. What are we doing? So I'm like, we need black missions. We need black social service providers, black nonprofits to get in. We're, NAACP ain't fighting for us in Skid Row. Why would we give a damn about them? Hmm. You know, I'm on the front lines. I'm also like, I remember, you know, I'm August 2006 when I started just in Skid Row. I was still doing, you know, my community activism my own way before that in South Central. I remember in 2013 when Black Lives Matter was born. Black Lives Matter has done more in Skid Row than NAACP. You know, Urban League and Brotherhood Crusade, oh, they may do something with the big missions or the big nonprofits. We in the streets, though. They inside the buildings. We talking about the people in the streets that are left for dead. When we talk about COVID, I know we're going to get into some of these other topics, you know, in a bit, but it's like, where, who's helping them? And then that's just us, the grassroots, the actual activists. You know, it's the activists that pushed that defund the police. It's the activists that activated the streets with a George Floyd protest. It wasn't no black preachers. Can't stand the black preachers all up in they churches, you know, getting that money from their congregations. Especially these mega black churches in L.A., like Skid Row's majority black. Where y'all at? I banged on them so hard. One, I ain't gonna name names, but anyway, they connected with Union Rescue Mission and had doing some preaching out of there a little bit to the people that's inside the four walls. What about us on the street? You totally missed the point. But Union Rescue Mission was happy because, we can check that box. Now, General Jeff, it's not applying. Whatever General Jeff says is not applying to us. We've got a black preacher. We got, and then they're like, they're using that nonprofit network to try to cancel out our voice, the voice of the people. I blast on them anyway. And so it's sad, but.
So yeah. Let's talk a little bit about LASA. You mentioned LASA, which is the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, which is basically the main, you know, organization by this funded, you know, through the city that is focusing on homelessness. So this is the city's arm of helping the homeless, LASA. You mentioned their salary or how much money that they're allocated to address homelessness. Also want to talk about Measure HHH, which the voters approved in 2016, mm-hmm. which gave the city of LA access to $1.2 billion in bonds, okay, to address the homeless crisis in Los Angeles. I want to talk about LASA, but since we're talking about Triple H, I have the city controller's website, and he did an audit in 2018, I believe. And it was some interesting things that I thought was interesting in here, which one of them was saying that basically he found an issue in decentralized accounting authority. And I quote, he says that another issue we identified during this is the 2017-2018 financial audit, was a structural weakness where no single city department is responsible for program-wide accounting decisions. And it mentions, you know, one department as well as another that were fulfilling the corresponding accounting activities. It says, however, administration of the facilities component of the Proposition HHH program is split between the Office of the City Administrative Officer, which oversees program operations, and the Board of Public Works Office and Accounting, which is responsible for accounting-related activities. And then they have this in bold. This arrangement caused confusion during the audit, demonstrated a lack of consistent understanding of the department's roles and responsibilities, and created unnecessary financial risk. And then they recommended that the city make some improvements, which they did. But it says, however, the lack of centralized accounting authority remains and may present problems in the future as additional funds are spent. I know that was pretty long-winded.
No, I got it. My brain works.
What comes to mind when you hear that?
Okay, well, again, there's a lot to unpack, but I'll get to it all. So to start with, LASA, Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, is a collaboration of the city and the county.
Okay.
The county funds majority of that funding. I believe it's $280 million per year. And the city provides, I believe it's $20 million per year. So it's $300 million per year. But they get additional funding. So it varies between $300 and $400 million. I like to just take, you know, it, like in accounting, you don't round down, you round up.
Right.
So if it's $12, $12.02, that 2 cents is actually into that 13th dollar. So in accounting, it's not $12, it's $13. You just round up. So, okay, $400 million what LASA distributes to its network of cronies. I mean, allies. I mean, qualified nonprofits.
Right.
Social service providers that do stuff across LA County. So in LA County, there's 88 cities in there, including the city of Los Angeles. 88 cities in Los Angeles County, and they all, you know, split up that funding, and that in and of itself is just a debacle. And what we're pushing is for Lassa to be disbanded. That money can be repurposed. We talking about defund police. We talking about defund Lassa. Shut that down. Break, bust that up. That's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous because at the end of the day, you know, the city can't tell the county what to do and the county can't tell the city what to do. So there's this infighting that it just, there's no dominant entity.
Mm-hmm.
This county feels like they're the dominant entity because they're putting up the most money, which I understand. Well, I'm paying for everything. What are you doing? I get that because that's how he'd be on the streets. But mm-hmm. then the city of LA is like, but if it's happening within the city of LA's borders,
mm-hmm.
the city of LA got control over the last say so over that.
Mm-hmm.
So how does county going to tell you paying for it? Yeah, but it's our bound within our boundaries. So there's never going to be unity in terms of that moment. And so our whole thing, just bust that up, split that up. Let's repurpose that money back into true investment in terms of homelessness. And, you know, the nonprofits you got to build, it's built in oversight,
mm-hmm.
Transparency, definitely,
so,
and accountability. So that's just on the Lassa component.
Okay.
But now on the Triple H, to answer that part of your question, and you know, and just so folks know, again, I've been on the front line since August 2006. So in November 2016 was when a Triple H was on the ballot. So it's a Measure HHH. Those keeping score at home, but we just call it Triple H for short. Not to be confused. So that the Triple H is a Los Angeles City ballot initiative. The city, so let's, you know, a lot of people don't know this. The city of Los Angeles provides the housing, is responsible for the housing. Los Angeles County is responsible for the services. So when we talk about housing by the city, it's the housing authority, the housing department, all of that is the city. The services is like Department of Mental Health, Department of Public Health, Department of Health Services, DPSS, Children and Family Services, all of that services. That's the county. And so those things are separate. So the county, while the city had Triple H that passed and voter approved in November 2016, the companion piece of that was LA County that passed Single H, Measure H. Was passed in March of 2017. So we want to get those clear. So Triple H was $1.2 billion for housing for homeless folks.
For the city to build.
For the city of Los Angeles to build, correct.
Okay.
Single H was, well, they say 300, they anticipated it to be $350 million per year for 10 years, which had $355 million per year. It's a marijuana tax.
And that money goes to Lassa?
And no. That money goes to the county.
Okay.
And then the county divvies that up how? Because it's going to be way more than what Lassa. The Lassa funding is automatically from a different funding pot.
Of where? From where?
From the county.
Okay.
So let's see if I can remember this right, because there's a lot of numbers. So, everybody, every 2 weeks, we, the people, we work, we get our paycheck. Every paycheck, Uncle Sam takes taxes. And I got to look at that number because I think what they're telling us they're taking is a lot less than what they're actually taking. We just lazily haven't, nobody's actually done the math. But anyway, so from that money, Uncle Sam distributes funding to all 50 states. And here it'd be to Sacramento, to California, state of California. Sacramento
so
is where the state
capital.
So
why we ain't get no more money in
so
a stimulus check?
So we're going to get there. We really need to touch on that. It's absolutely insane. So the state of California, I believe its annual budget is around $170 billion. So then you come down to, so there's local, state, and federal politics. So that's the state level. Then on the, so in Los Angeles, local level, it's the county of Los Angeles. Again, they got 88 cities, including the city of LA. Its annual budget is $30 billion. And then within, so that they get that and they fund it, you know, to keep the, of course, the LA County keep their own facilities going. And then they distribute that to the different cities, 88 cities. At the city of LA, I believe their budget is slightly less than $10 billion.
Hmm.
And this happens every year. So when it gets that funding, and so when the mayor puts together, you know, his annual budget, you know, LAPD and whatever else they go for, then LAPD gets the majority of it because, oh my God, public safety, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, look, we got potholes, you know, it's a whole lot of infrastructure, like, It's a whole lot of stuff we can do. And so when that funding is divvied up every year, so out of that money that comes out, LASA is already written into those budgets, the city's budget and the county's budget every year. Triple H and Single H were totally separate ballot initiatives, like a one-time ballot initiative that the voters went to the polls and approved. November 9, 2016 for Triple H, March 2017 for Single H. So then there's separate funding pots from these other funding pots we just mentioned. So Triple H is $1.2 billion specifically for housing for homeless people. Single H, again, is marijuana tax. So Triple H was property tax, a millionaire's tax, property tax on millionaires. And so technically, like, we didn't really pay into that, but we voted to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
We the people. And so $1.2 billion there. The marijuana tax, Single H, was to generate $355 million over 10 years. At the end of the day, that's $4 billion. So $4 billion that the county gets to split up. So no, that money doesn't automatically go to LASA, because LA County can do it. That's too much money for LASA. If they can only handle, if they only get $400 million a year, you know, $4 billion is way above their pay grade. So we don't know what's going on with that $4 billion. So then once we understand where all these funding pots are, and then we look at, okay, well, and then separate from that, out of LA County's budget, what did I say their budget was? Was a $30 billion. So roughly around that. So like Department of Mental Health, we'll take that, because a big thing, oh, these homeless folks, mentally ill, oh my God. Department of Mental Health. Department of Mental Health's annual budget that comes from LA County services is $3 billion. You know, so that means every 10 years, Department of Mental Health gets $30 billion. I look around, I don't see $30 billion on the streets. Trust and believe, if Slauson Girl got $30 billion every 10 years, you see logos, man, you see, man, Slauson Girl is everywhere. I don't see DMA, I don't even know what their logo looks like.
I see homeless people that are, you know, out of their minds. So
yeah, where are the services?
Right, we don't see no
services. $3
billion
a year. I should be. I have somebody on every other block. Definitely in somebody in every community. And I'm not talking about. And the thing about government is the same structure as these nonprofits. Oh, it's whatever's going on inside our four walls. Oh, well, if they come inside our four walls, we'd be more than happy. We're right here in the community to help them, and we'd be probably growing up, walking right by these facilities. We don't even know what they, but it's the nicest, cleanest, brand new building, right. Well landscaped.
Right.
It looks great. Has anybody ever been in it? What do they do? The such and such and such and such. Like, who are they?
But it is.
Stick
like
your head
right
in the door.
There.
Then you come to find out that's where all the funding for the hood is going.
Right.
To these folks, they ain't even stepped outside and waved the flag. Hey, come on in.
Right.
We got the resources. Let's do something.
Right.
So then it's only them, and then the black preachers find out. The way the black preachers find out is because the politicians need that black vote. And historically, it's always been, oh, the black vote is in the black church.
Right.
So and if you want the black community, so they'll come by, photo op with all the top churches. Mm-hmm. Other than that, man, that's the black vote. I've done enough.
So
the black church, the black pastors have their own network. Somehow they, you know, are in favor. And then they get funding. They qualify, whether it's through the mayor's office, you know, and through the politicians coming through the mayor, the governor, or whoever. And then so they're taken care of. And then, you know, the nonprofits, again, are taken care of. And so then we would look at Triple H and Single H. So what the controller Galpern was saying, he's saying like, hey, because you've got both the city and the county, you know, basically supposedly controlling everything. Well, it's like, okay, I may have $50 on it and, you know, you got $20 on it, but it's like, well, I'm kind of short. I got 30 on it, but I'm gonna keep this $20 for a rainy day. You only putting up 10, so on the books we writing 30 and 10, 40, but we actually have 50 and 20 is 70. That's money is missing. So he's like, yeah, there's financial risk involved because who's overseeing the people that's accounting the money?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so there's no checks and balances structure in place that can make them, you know, transparency is at that point is comes into play. And so what they did was we fought. So again, I opposed Triple H. I seen it coming. I'm like, these ain't this nothing but snake oil salesmen, and they still selling snake oil, and we taxing ourselves. My whole thing, y'all already got billions of dollars funding pots that y'all messing off. Why give y'all a whole new $1 billion funding pot of new money? That it's insane. And then Single H came behind that $4 billion. That's combined $5.2 billion. And both of these supposed to be 10-year programs. And you know, from November 2016, this is 2020. We're like past the 4-year mark. We almost at the halfway mark of a 10-year plan. We into year five. In the accounting, you round up. We're in the year five. So we're at the halfway point. In 10,000, they're supposed to be, where's the housing? Where's the money going? So when we fought this before when it hit the ballot, I'm fighting against United Way, you know, because so they have the local nonprofits, you have national nonprofits, and you have international nonprofits. So a local nonprofit would be like the missions and shelters, social service providers. You have the national nonprofits like the United Way, you know, the international nonprofits, the Red Cross, the all-poverty pimp. You know, there's no shame in the game. General Jeff is public enemy number one because I'm spitting the game. I'm telling the truth. I'm spilling all the beans. They're all poverty pimping. And so United Way, and I can run that. And trust and believe, they know. I went head up with them. And so I'm on other media outlets. We're doing debates in terms of I'm like, no on it's funny, I'm not even really into politics because at the end of the day, you know, when the smoke clear, you know, we still on the boot on the front lines, boots on the ground, putting in the work. Ain't no politicians there. Ain't no, y'all in your four walls. Y'all not out in the streets. Got to get out in the streets. And so anyway, but I had to go, you know, I'm no on prop on Triple H. These cats, of course, they're for it because they already know it's going to go to the city, which means the city is governed by the mayor and they got the mayor connected to their bosom. And so whatever they push, because, you know, so it's a lot to unpack, but I'm just breaking it down. I'm just dumping it out there. We can slow it down based on Sloss and Girls' pace. I don't know. I'm just sharing information. So there's no politician that is run on the platform as a campaign as an expert on homelessness. So, you know, if they're, you know, they're like, oh, we're going to create jobs. Oh, we, you know, improve our education. You know, they hit all this typical random stuff. But they can't say, well, I personally was, you know, worked with the homeless or I did. So they don't know. There's not one of them that can speak to as an expert on homelessness. So they have to rely on their nonprofit partners that have in the homelessness field that have the quote unquote track record. And so then the mayor will lean, connect with the United Way. United Way will do a whole bunch of stuff and say, oh, you know, every walk, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, walk with Kobe Bryant and end homelessness. And then people donate money to United Way to walk around to just get a photo out with Kobe. And they not even walk around like Skid Row where no homeless people at. They over by USC and Exposition Park. But then all of a sudden every year they raise fundraising. And then so it legitimizes their track record. Like United Way is doing so much every year, you know, to end homelessness. And so then this becomes their marketing campaign, which is just a slogan, you know, everyone in. You know, everyone in. And so then all of a sudden the mayor's pushing everyone in. Why? Because he's connected to United Way, and that validates, it looks like it's, you know, it justifies his resume. And so then this mayor, he's got one foot out the door hoping to get to Washington, D.C. With the Democratic ticket that's about to take over the White House. And so he's just trying to do big ticket items to make it look like he's doing stuff. So going back years, we've seen it all coming. So we're like, no on Triple H. And then other allies were like, well, if you're going to approve this, we need a Triple H oversight committee, put together a committee that's going to watch over this money. And what the mayor and the city council members did, they handpicked their cronies and buddies to be on the oversight committee. And so they're, you know, we thought it was going to be us on the front lines holding them accountable, like check the numbers, check the data. And it was a farce even before when they announced who was on the committee. And they're like, oh, that's basically your sister, your auntie. They not going to hold you accountable. That's your family. That's your next door neighbors. That's the, you know, the lady in the choir and the church. That ain't, Oh, man. And so I walked away from all that. And so we still got allies that still pounding the podium, wagging a finger, trying to hold them accountable. And it's like that money. So $1.2 billion before Comptroller Galpern's audit in 2018, in 2017, because we were saying, hey, we got to audit them. You know, we audit them because we know it's not right. They came out and announced in 2017, the CAO was Miguel Santana. And he came out and he, because, you know, hey, we were, you know, wagging our finger in his face and he got to keep it when he's a good dude, good hearted dudes. It's like he's not with the corruption and all that. And so it's his job to, you know, tell the truth, keep it 100. And he kept it 100. And what come to find out of his audit was that $1.2 billion every, it's a 10-year program. And in year three, they said every penny was already, well, this was actually an audit about after year two. And they said every penny was already allocated. And it's like $1.2 billion, it's already gone. It's already out. Yeah, it's gone. How is it in year two? It's already. So what they did was they already divvied up that money that they anticipate over the next 10 years. And they pre-selected who was going to get the funding and who wasn't. So people, you know, so like real estate developers were putting in proposals. We're going to provide some affordable housing here, some. We're going to do a project over there. We're going to include a couple of units there. And if you include a couple of units, you qualify for some, it's low income only. Yeah, we're going to house, you know, a couple of, but they got a luxury joint with, you know, a, you know, hundreds of units. But then we had a couple of low income, you know, house some other. Oh, so we get some Triple H funding and some, the city. Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Gone. All the funding is gone. And so, you know, if we come together like, oh, 1.2 billion, we should put something together if we're a black nonprofit trying to house our people. It Triple H is gone. And so when you say is it a bonds, a GO bonds, general obligation bonds, and that's where, you know, it basically is, it's free from, you know, specifics, from limitations. And so they can take, they can play with it. It's house money. And they move this around here and knowing that they can somehow, you know, flip it back and replace that later on the goodness, the kindheartedness of their name as representatives for the city of Los Angeles, and then they moving around and just shucking it. Oh man, it's always cold-blooded. And that's where we as a people, we don't know, again, about politics, about nonprofits, shuffling money. It's a money game, and that's where we don't know in terms of economics. It's a whole lot that we don't know, folks.
So let's talk a little bit about the homeless and COVID. Do you think that the nonprofits and LASA and the different organizations have been really trying to help the homeless population during this pandemic? Or do you feel that they're kind of like left out there to fend for themselves?
Well, in the beginning, no. At the beginning, they weren't doing anything. Like, oh, well, we can't even get no mask. Oh, well, when we get some mask in, we'll let you know. Next, you know, it's just, could you close the door on your way out? Like, oh, okay. And, you know, then when the numbers first blew by March, okay, the April, it's like, wait a minute, the numbers, wait a minute, this is serious. Like, what's going on? It's spread out around the world. And so then finally, you know, they had to take care of we got to take care of our employees, you know, because inside their four walls first, we got to take care of our program, men and women. What about the people on the streets? And then finally by May, folks started pulling up with masks and the mayor's office finally kicked in and, but the testing wasn't still, you know, they still wasn't testing in Skid Row. So all of a sudden numbers are coming in for all these other communities. And, I know the director of Department of Public Health, Dr. Barbara Ferrer. And it's like, I was a L.A. County appointed official from 2015 to 2017. So when she first got put on, she came and presented to my advisory board. And so I know her. We keep in touch. Anybody come before me, you got that card? Networking, like the entertainment industry. Let me get that card. Let me get your assistant's card. Who is it? You with her? Let me get your card too. Great. I'll be in touch. And I have a 24 hours rule. If I get your card, I'm going to hit you back within 24 hours. And then that email goes, hey, it was great meeting you at this such and such meeting where you presented to us and talked about the that. So even if I don't remember, I can go years later, go back into my archive and pull that email up and I can see when we met, how we met, what the topic was, and that's going to refresh my memory. And but hey, remember me? I'm the guy that you met at when you came and presented before the because I already got it spelled out in my initial email. 24 hours while it's fresh, and then a lot of times people get right back to you, right? Immediately, because it's fresh on their minds too. They was just there yesterday, 24-hour rule. But when you let weeks and weeks go by, they go into different means, meeting different. Oh yeah, whatever. They may not even respond. And so I've been a great at building a rapport with folks. And so Barbara Ferris, so it's like, hey, we need them Skid Row specific numbers. What's going on with COVID? Oh, we don't have those. And you know, she have her staff delegate. They'll come back to us and say a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And it's like, man, we need these numbers. Where's the test? So then finally, they were so slow to respond. Then finally, they got it in gear. And then all of a sudden, there was an outbreak at the Union Rescue Mission. And it was like one employee and a couple of guests. Not only were they infected, because they wound up later on dying. Three people died. And then a whole bunch of other folks were infected.
How long ago was this?
This was in May of 2020. And then later, so my whole thing was, oh, they need to shut the mission down, empty it out, disinfect it from top to bottom completely. Like, if COVID is all up in there, it's just going to continue.
And the mission, for people that don't know, is like the largest homeless shelter in downtown LA?
Well, there's three of them. Union mm-hmm. Rescue Mission is one. There's also the Midnight Mission. There's also the Los Angeles Mission. Mm-hmm. There's a Fred Jordan Mission, but they've kind of fallen off a little bit. We'll get back into them when we talk about this super spreader event that they were claimed to not be a part of, but from the visual, it looked like they was a part of it, whatever. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but yeah, Union Rescue Mission. So I'm like, you got to shut that thing down. We can save our people. And then the CEO over there came out. I was like, oh, we got under control. We're going to just reduce our population in half, which, you know, at the end of the day, we come to find out they just kicked a lot of people out on the street. And it was like, yo, man, you can't, what do y'all, like, house them, like, what do y'all, oh, man, it's just, so anyway, okay, then it seemed like everything was under control. And then we just found out less than 30 days ago, there was another outbreak. And, you know, so the number was over 100 people had COVID up in there. And so we don't even know the new numbers. Is this the new numbers? Or are these the new numbers after that first initial batch? And so we can't tell. And it's like Department of Public Health. We need to know, we not only on this facility, but we want to know Skid Row specific numbers. I just fired off an email 2 days ago. Again, you know, because we keep hitting them. We need to know the numbers, Skid Row specific numbers, Skid Row specific numbers. Because they got Skid Row breaking down. The warehouse district is part of the industrial district, is another part, the toy district. And it's like, man, if you got Little Tokyo and, you know, Arlington Heights and all, if they got their communities, and no disrespect to them, but they've got their accurate numbers, how can not Skid Row, which is the homeless capital of America, how can we not have some Skid Row specific numbers?
So
we question Department of Public Health's their truth and honesty and what role they play in all of this.
So how is the homeless community in LA been dealing with the pandemic? I mean, you talk about pre-COVID, the community was, it looks like a third world country down there. A lot of these encampments with the tents and, you know, the piles of trash and the lack of access to public restrooms, you know. So you talk about already living with those conditions and then a global pandemic where everything's even, you know, access to resources are like almost diminished completely. How has the homeless community been dealing with the pandemic?
Well, you know, the one thing I will say about Skid Row, and no, I'm not, well, you could say I'm biased. Of course, it's going to sound like I'm biased, but because I'm one of them, but the community activists in Skid Row on the front lines, we doing a heck of a job holding our elected officials accountable, speaking up, what, you know, letting the news media, you know, Sloss and Girl included, to let folks give real-time information on the truth of what's really going on. And at the same time, you know, walking the streets. I literally, just before I came to this interview from Skid Row, and when I get done, I'm going right back to the streets of Skid Row. And so, you know, so we got the real-time information and we going hard. And so then, not to mention, it's the winter and rain season is finna come. So the natural, normal flu season that's coming, like you said. So pre-COVID, you know, our whole thing is, you know, Triple H, they talking about these shelters. We don't want shelters. We want housing, our own individual rooms. So now they're talking about socially distancing. Well, if we'd have had our own individual rooms, that's exactly what we're talking about. Apartment, put some shovels in the ground. When you talk about these shelters, they're like dormitories that you got hundreds of people smashed together on cots, whether it's bunk bed style, stacked up or what have you. And it's like, nah, you can't socially distance that way. And you can't, they're just trying to get people's quote unquote indoors by any means necessary. No disrespect to Malcolm X on that. But, you know, and it's like, but that it, there's an appropriate way to do it. And these shelters. So the thing that the most pissed off part about it is the way they're building these new shelters is where they're getting the funding from. It's coming. They're spending, they're redirecting Measure Triple H funding that's supposed to go towards like literally low income housing units. They're taking that funding away and redirecting it and use it because there's on. So then I went back and looked at the language when they were promoting Triple H. And you look at the small print way down at the bottom says that they can also use this funding for shelters in the interim while they're trying to get these actual units built. And so a lot of people don't know about, you know, this pilot development. So in terms of low income, you know, it's just an apartment building. It takes about 3 years minimum in terms of low income housing. It takes about 3 years to build. And so, you know, that's where the city's like, well, in the meantime, we still got to get the people off the street. So we're just going to redirect this, get some shelters going and put up some big, large tents, you know, canopies, and the people can just move inside and put the resources. And
a canopy.
Yeah, big old like a circus tent. And then move people inside. They're calling it the mayor, you know, the mayor's calling it like it's his bridge housing. So it's like a bridge, like you get start here, then you cross over and you end up there. But if you using the money that's for the actual housing and use it on these circus tents, there's no money going to be left for the housing. And it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Like if you got money for some chili cheese fries, but you say, oh, I'm just going to spend, let me just buy this bubble gum right quick. Mm-hmm. And you just buying bubble gum. Eventually, you're not going to have the money for the chili cheese fries that you promised everybody you was going to get.
Right. So how do you feel that the city has said that they're not going to be doing a homeless count this year because of the coronavirus pandemic?
Homeless count is a farce anyway. I've been outspoken against them. And so the whole thing is, again, like when I talked about I was outspoken against United Way and walk with Kobe Bryant and in homelessness. A lot of folks don't know. Going back to my basketball world, they don't know General Jeff got reach. I just try to make it look like my reach. I barely got followers on social media. No, I got reach, but they don't know that. And so Kobe Bryant, we know a lot of the same folks. He played pro basketball in L.A. I'm born in L.A. Basketball world is not that big. And so I reached out to Kobe, and I told him, and so I'm like, hey, bro, you don't know this nonprofit hustle game, but they used it. You're effing off your legacy by letting these folks, these nonprofits, use you and exploiting your fame to get these, you know, to pimp homelessness. And, you know, when I broke it down to him, he was hesitant at first, of course, because, you know, he's like, but they're a big organization. They're, you know, United Way, they're known all over the world. Hey, man, hey, they're poverty pimping all over the world. Okay, I'm the truth is the truth. I'm not concerned about that. I'm talking about your legacy. Because I'm giving you real-time information. If you want to roll with them, that's cool. I just feel like you need to have the real information. Of course, they're not going to tell you what they're doing. But I'm just telling you right now, bro, that when you think about it, if they raise $1 million every time these people pay to photo op with you because your name's on, if your name wasn't on it, would they raise millions of dollars every year to walk around? And let me ask you this, Cole. How does walking around help end homelessness? That's when I got then the light bulb, because, you know, he's a deep thinker. That's when the light bulbs went off. And he was like, he couldn't answer the question. I said, yeah, your name is on you. They using you. You standing side by side with United Way. You're saying, walk with me and end homelessness. How does walking around end somebody? Because at the end of the day, when they get done walking, all them people, they go home to their warm, cozy homes. And them us homeless people, we still going to be homeless. So that's explained. So that's when the bam light bulb started. Oh, hold up, yo, hold up. Did you know about it? He asked me, did you know about this? Did you, y'all got me? He said, hold on. So just long story short, all of a sudden that year, because it was already scheduled to happen, and Kobe Bryant came up with an injury that he couldn't participate because it was a leg injury and he couldn't walk around. He's got to heal and work on his injury. And so he canceled on that year and he never went back. Mm-hmm. So it's like, woo, we won for the people. Kobe. Cool. And so, you know, and those are the types of things we do behind closed doors. And so when it comes to COVID, you know, we're on the front line saying like, yo, we need these resources in terms of housing, like speed up the game. So when a global pandemic hit, you know, the city and the county, they froze up. They're used to the normal poverty pimping stuff. They're not a global pandemic. Everybody's looking around. Okay, well, what's the plan? What are y'all going to do? You know, just before COVID hit, that officially announced that it hit in March of 2020. In January of 2020, the heavens hit me. And so what there's this document called the Skid Row Interagency Disaster Plan. And so what I did was I reconvened that task force, a brand new task force, to update that plan. It was old, like over 10 years old. It was old and outdated. I'm like, in case a disaster hits in Skid Row, we need to be prepared. There's new entities here. Some of and I looked at the old plan and it's old and outdated. The information, some of these folks aren't even in Skid Row anymore. We need to make sure, like the walkie talkies and radios, like who's keeping them, like what's good. Everything is working. We need, and I just convened that meeting in January. And so, of course, overseas, technically on the timeline, COVID had already hit. I didn't even know about it. And then by 2 months later, like, oh, COVID hit. And so we stopped having those meetings because it was too fast right upon us. But that shows our fingers on the pulse. Mm-hmm. It's like the heavens told us something is coming, mm-hmm. get ready. And, you know, these folks move slow because at the end of the day, they're not experts. You know, it's like just because they put in that position and they getting that paycheck, they don't know what they're doing. And at the end of the day, they have their understaff that's actually doing all the work, compile all the data, give them a report, and they get the report, and then they'll show up in front of the photo op or front of the, you know, board of county supervisors or city council members or the mayor, and then they'll just read what's on the paper. They didn't actually compile that data themselves. They didn't actually write that report, you know, or they may write with, if they got time to rewrite it, do whatever. It's like, man, this is it. Right. So when we talk about the homeless count, so the homeless count is flawed off top. And I've been attacking it every year. So when I first got to Skid Row.
Just FYI, we only have 5 minutes left.
Oh, damn, not even. Okay, so Mike Arnold was the.
And I still want to ask you a question about the institutional racism adding to the homeless.
Right, stats. And we even got to the super spreader. So let me just finish up real quick. So Mike Arnold was the executive director of LASA. We ran him out of there. They replaced him with Peter Lynn. We ran him out of there. And we're like, hey, we need a woman in there because apparently the men can't get it done. So now they've got a female over there. And so, but the whole thing is,
they're not prepared.
Because the whole thing is because of COVID. See, LASA does their homeless count, you know, with volunteers. They got all that funding and then y'all not paying people to walk around counting homeless people. Where's your staff at? Why don't y'all count them? Why does it take so long, you know, to get the data? Like, what's going on? So all that's a farce. And so the whole thing is the volunteer, they already knew the volunteers ain't showing up to walk out there and be exposed to COVID if it's a shelter at home. How you gonna count homeless people? So that's not, so of course, yeah, that was the smartest thing to do was to cancel it this year. Plus it's a farce anyway. So anyway, but that's why they didn't do it this year and we're okay with it. So because we don't want volunteers, you know, random people to be exposed to COVID.
Definitely. So one thing I do want to touch on before we in this particular episode is some of the language that is coming out of the statistics regarding the homeless in LA, in particular, the Black community. We're only 8% of the population, but we represent over about 42% of the homeless rates in Los Angeles. And this is coming from LASA themselves, and the New York Times also wrote a piece in 2019 highlighting the institutional racism aiding in the disproportionate rates of Black people being homeless in LA. So when you hear things like that, you know, being from, you know, the community, like, how does that make you feel as a Black man, as a native of Los Angeles?
Well, again, when I started my community activism, I checked the numbers on the 2000 census, because the census is done every 10 years. The 2000 census, you know, when I checked that Skid Row specific numbers, they said Skid Row was 16.7% African-American, 16.7, knowing that Skid Row's majority African-American since the 80s with the crack epidemic, like 16.7. What are you talking about? And I live here. I'm moving around these streets. It's way more, like, this is insane. So at that point in time, and then they said at that time, it was like 45.3% white, I believe it said. And it's like, these numbers, that's ridiculous. It's disrespectful. So right then there, I know the census is done by the federal government. I'm like, the federal government is lying. And so I blasted them, did videos, you know, all of that stuff. So in 2010, somehow, all of a sudden, blacks, all of a sudden, it rose up 30%. It was a 45.6. And so I blasted the federal government again. What happened in the last 10 years that all of a sudden it was this 30% increase in the Democrat, knowing that it wasn't, but they raised it from 16.7 to 45.3. Like, yeah, they got to tell the truth a little bit, because we on the front lines, our voice, we speaking out. And so then from there, and then they trying to get now, Lassa came out in 2017 and said Skid Row was up 76% African-American. So I'm like, now the number, here we go. Now we getting closer to the ballpark. But we know that numbers and data and statistics, all that stuff is fluff. Mm-hmm. And they use it to frame any narrative, what have you. And so I personally am not running around counting homeless people and counting the demographics. I would love to, but I'm like, I'm not going to do that for free. There's so much, only so much I'll do for free. But it just hits me hard, like, okay, that's just disrespectful that they just pushing out false numbers.
Right. And so you mentioned that Skid Row has been majority Black since the 80s, yes, due to the crack epidemic. Can you talk a little bit about, like, how the crack epidemic has made Skid Row to become majority Black?
Yeah, I mean, you know, rest in peace Gary Webb, and rest in peace Michael Rupert, that, you know, they blew the cover off of it, where the CIA was bringing the dope to South Central. You know, everybody points to Freeway Rick, but there were other folks too, and the guns and all of that. And so and LAPD were escorts that would make sure that, you know, the dope got to where it needed to go. And Skid Row was one of the landing spots. And so in 1975, well, in the mid 70s, then Governor Ronald Reagan shut down the state-run mental institutions, because that system was all messed up. And there was a thing where parents could just sign away their teenage, and make them a ward of the state. So when they ward of the state, that means they can sign away, they take them in. Oh, something's wrong. You know, teens rebel. Oh, they just want to go out to the party. I ran away, snuck out the house. I'm signed, make you a ward of the state. So all of a sudden, you got a lot of quote unquote normal kids that's in these mental institutions getting doped up and getting raped. It's crazy. So we, the people, you know, back then was like, y'all got to shut them things, that we can let the kids, like, this is crazy. But when they did that, they let everybody out. And so then the well-to-do folks here in LA and Beverly Hills and the West Side was like, we don't want quote unquote them, the crazies, running around, coming to our communities where our kids, our families and churches and schools. So the pilot to do something, we making a lot of campaign contributions. So they created in 1975 the Skid Row Containment Zone policy, its actual policy. And so what they did was basically say, we'll keep everybody in this area, because back then downtown wasn't this vibrant area. It was just the skyscrapers, and that was it. And so on nights and on weekends, it was just a ghost town. And so then that's when there was the whole thing, LAPD was like, entrusted, don't let we show up for work first thing Monday morning, make sure everything, the city's not, the skyscrapers aren't burned down. And now, so the Skid Row Containment Zone policy was like, from 3rd to 7th Main Alameda, let them do, keep them contained, let them do whatever the hell they want to do. And, you know, that way the rest of us, you know, are safe. And so they had that designated area, which was Skid Row. And that's how LAPD polices the community to this day. And then when the dope came in, they let folks get doped up and get high and do whatever in Skid Row, so that way they can harm themselves, like a form of harm reduction, and which is funding for the harm reduction is a recovery model. And then the rest of the city was deemed safe. And that's the model, what it's been to this day.
Wow. Okay, definitely. So we got to head out of here, but I do want to touch on real quick the super spreader event that recently happened, or is being called a super spreader event. What was? Let's talk a little bit about that. Was it a pastor that was trying to have an event?
I'm not sure if he's a pastor, but I know it's this guy that sings. He's very popular, sings Christian songs, sings the gospel, and he's got, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans, and goes around all over the world singing the gospel, praising Jesus Christ. So they took it upon themselves to come to, you know, during the holidays, want to come to Skid Row, and they're anti-maskers. So they come around with no mask on, and they want to come pray on our community members and sing and bring all their thousands of folks. And we're like, no. It's a global pandemic. We out of control with this COVID. We out of control with flu season. It is COVID. We thanks, but no thanks. Like keep it pushed. No. If y'all gonna wear a mask, cool. Y'all can pull up. If y'all not gonna wear a mask, son. We not doing that. And so they, like, you know, our folks, you know, reached out to them, led by Pastor Q, Church Without Walls in Skid Row. That's our lead pastor in our community. And he reached out to him. No reply. No, not a respect. Oh, is disrespect involved? And then the guys doing interviews like, oh, we coming. We heard some naysayers or some so-called activists. So-called, like, wait, hold on, homie. What's that? So Pastor Q sounded the alarm, put the call in, call for action. And the whole thing was going, we just going to block. They already gave up their position on what specific block they were going to come to. And it's like, well, we going to pull up. We got allies, and about over 100 cars pulled up, just blocked the whole street. And we started, you know, pray, got some a flatbed truck with some sound, with some speakers. And we just started pumping our energy, and we drowned their little thing out. So the dude never even showed up, you know, because it became this battle. The media got a wind of it. This was a big, huge deal. And, you know, they were like just running up on homeless people sleep on the sidewalk, and you might 6 or 7 people, Jesus loves you, Jesus. And it's like, y'all in there scaring people out of their deep sleep. Like, what in the heck are y'all doing? And y'all no mask on, and y'all all close point blank range breathing on people. We don't know if y'all got COVID. We don't know what is going. So yeah, it was a super spreader event, and we pushed it out. We called it as such. The main dude didn't show up. You're not having no concert in Skid Row. So we shut that thing down, even though some of his followers, diehards, showed up, anti-maskers. But at the end of the day, that situation flopped for them. And so we, you know, wanted that to lead that, to let that be a message to any other quote unquote do-gooders. Like, we're like, who invited you? Like, you can't just come into any, roll up in anybody's community and just start doing whatever the hell you want to do. Like, we don't get down like that, even in Skid Row. Don't do that. So let that be a lesson to everybody else. Anybody can come through, pass out bars, whatever have to do, but respect the politics of what's going on in the streets. And so, hey, if you want to come to Skid Row, wear a mask. I'm just saying.
Definitely. Okay, well, we unfortunately have to end
this
segment.
I got so much more to talk about.
We can do a part two. It looks like we're probably going to have to definitely do a part two, for sure.
I got so much more to talk about.
But let the people know where they can find you, and also, you know, just leave us with what you hope for the future of Skid Row.
Back in when I was in my streets life, I said, oh, I'm everywhere and nowhere. However, these days, I'm in Skid Row. That's where I'm at. You know, Facebook, General Jeff. On the gram, it's at Skid Row, General Jeff. On Twitter, it's at Go Skid Row Go. My email, spelled all the way out, is issuesandsolutions@yahoo.com. That's issuesandsolutions@yahoo.com. Normally I get my cell phone out, but somehow these folks from overseas keep calling, and I don't know what that's about. But, you know, anyway, you can reach out for them. My phone is on 24/7. I will, you know, reach back and all of that. And so, and we can start from there, and holler at me.
Definitely. And your hope for the future of Skid Row?
Oh, to get, we need to just completely implode whatever system is in place right now and start over. It's impossible for it to be fixed based on what's in the structure, the infrastructure that's in place. It's philosophical differences, but there's no way. It's like trying to build a house on flawed concrete. Like, when you lay a foundation, You know, you lay down a smooth, nice, smooth concrete foundation and let it dry hard. If it's got cracks in it, which Skid Row does, why would you build? Anything you build is going to come crumbling down. That's what's been happening historically in Skid Row. We need to completely implode that, remove all of that, lay down a whole new foundation with a whole new new building structure.
I know I said we were going to end, but I do have a follow-up question. Do you feel like, I did hear a woman speak on this about the homeless crisis in, I believe, Oregon or Washington, a Caucasian lady, and she used to be homeless. And she said that, I feel like we're looking at the homeless crisis kind of in the wrong way. She said we need to also be focusing on the drug crisis. What do you think about that?
Well, again, as far as Skid Row specifically, is African American, it's black folks. We don't own no planes. We're not bringing the drugs into the country. They don't manufacture cocaine. They don't grow cocaine here, you know. So when they talk about focus on the drugs, like, that's the problem. They want to focus on it when it starts with the black people and the brown people. They don't go to the top of the food chain of who the folks is actually mastermind, the kingpins that's actually making it for the drugs to get into this country, that's softening the borders, that's allowing the stuff to get in here to poison our people. So if they're going to talk that talk, let's point fingers all the way at the top. Hmm. It's like you said, if they say, it's too much alcohol in Skid Row, don't point at the people that's on the street corner selling, got a side hustle selling alcohol. Point to the manufacturers, whether it's, I don't want to give no endorsements, but whether it's the whiskey makers, bourbon makers, cognac, whoever it is, the people that's making the cognac, the alcohol, and then from there, who's distributing it from their levels to get to our community. It can't get to, somebody's got to bring it in. And so again, we know from the 80s, law enforcement was in on it. So if she's saying, hey, let's point fingers at the police and law enforcement that's still bringing that dope in our communities, I'm all for it, I agree. Hmm. But don't just point at the black folks that side up. Now that it's here, I'm trying to, we might as well hustle up, but no, point it, go all the way to the top.
When did black people start using meth? Because I recently saw members of like my generation using meth, and it just seems like meth is something that is in the black community now, and I never knew us to be using meth like that from back in the day.
Since the 90s it wasn't real popular because crack was so popular, but it's like in Skid Row specifically, like since the 2000s, tough. Not only just meth, heroin, H goes back, you call it H on the streets, goes back decades. And then, those that use it, those worlds, those that use it, use it. Those that don't, dope. But it's been there. It's been there. Trust and believe, it's all kind of dope that, some folks is, doing, it's sad. It's a lot of folks doing all slamming, they just take the needle. They don't like try to find a vein. They'll just slam it into like a leg or something, squid and push it in. I don't want to get too graphic, but
squirming. Yeah. Like, I didn't write my college essay about seeing a guy smoke crack. I was like, get me out of here. I'm watching people smoke crack. Let me in your college. But, this is the real last question, though. Do you think that tiny homes would improve homelessness in L.A.?
No. The reason why is because there's not enough real estate. Tiny homes take up space. Where are you going to put them? It sound good. Oh, it's great. Yeah. We've had so many, what the folks came to Skid Row with, EDAR. Everybody deserves a roof. EDAR. Mm-hmm. And what those were like some fold up metal tents. You unfold them when you want to sleep. Bam. And it's like, okay. And they're on wheels. So you can, in the daytime, you can roll them up. So then you got to roll this big apparatus around. And it sounds good on paper. Tiny homes, pallet homes. All these types of folks coming up with all these wonderful ideals, but if you don't have the space to put them, like if you guys donated this room right here, how many tiny homes could fit in this place? Two in this space. Two? So then it's like, okay, you're only housing two people. Like, that's not, or in a parking lot. If you're only housing 10 people, is that really a solution? When, especially in Skid Row, you got thousands of people, you're going to come up with, where are you going to put 1,000 tiny homes?
You think we need apartments, more apartments?
That's more feasible because you can build multiple floors. You can build on top of it. You can go up.
Right.
Like, one thing about, tiny homes and those type of things, you have to build out.
Okay.
You can't build out. There's not enough space. You got to build up. So you got to stack. Shipping containers makes more sense because you can stack shipping containers, but you need land. Where are you going to put it?
Right.
And so now in California, the real estate prices are so high, the developers is not going to let it go for dirt cheap to house homeless people when you can build luxury condos for top value. It makes sense to me in terms of capitalist society.
Right.
And that's where it's a problem. And so, you know, and I'll close with this, you know, with America being a capitalist society, you know, and I even, you know, start with, you know, our forefathers and foremothers like Martin Luther King and them, and they were talking about equality. You can't have equality in a capitalist society. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is somebody wins and somebody loses every time, every business deal. That's how it is. And the way they've maximized that is on the same limited number of folks are the ones that are winning. That means the majority of the rest of us are losing. So that's why it's, the upper 1% is getting all the money. Yeah, that's capitalism at its best. They're hoarding all the resources and funding, and the trickle down economics, that stuff will never work because greed is involved. It would work in a just society, but America is no longer a just society. And we learned that as black folks through the police brutality, the judicial system. So quite naturally, the economic system is not going to be fair and square. So if they've compromised all the major components of America, America is doomed for failure. And so while we're sitting here hoping and believing in the system that will one day, you know, make sense, it can't make sense. And especially for those of us all the way down at the bottom of society's totem pole, the bottom 1%, it's never gonna be straightened out. Because you got that same capitalism that's on the upper 1%, that same mindset exists on the bottom 1%. And so it's a whole separate infrastructure with the people on top of that homeless sector, the homeless industrial complex. They're eating swell off of the demise of others. Mm-hmm. And so as long as that structure is in place with no regulation and no oversight, true oversight and transparency, it's going to continue. It's already out of control. So the next 10 to 15 years, easily, I can put 15 years on it. The next 15 years, we're going to continue to look exactly like this, if not worse.
Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Sloss and Girl Speaks. And follow Sloss and Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.